You talk about a White House press briefing, boy. Very reminiscent of the gist of what I want to talk about today. Because all kinds of strange things are going on these days. I think you might have noticed. Have you ever seen a month like the last one as far as the craziness in the news media and in the political scene as it goes? Obviously, and we would have said this years ago, but I think more so now than ever, the world is going crazy, is it not? How are you handling that? And it's crazy because it's been aggravated by a new component into the world scene that the likes of which we have not seen recently, perhaps in this generation. In the current political climate, there has been reference to a great awakening. And I think we know what that means. Things are changing in a very profound and a very deep way. Things that we wouldn't necessarily have ever expected would happen are happening. And we have to wonder, where is all of this going to lead? Every day, it seems, we're assaulted with falsehoods. Some of them from the mainstream media, some of them from governmental sources, and some of them just circulating within the general population. So much is being pumped out that may have a hint of truth buried in it, but usually it's overwhelmed with agenda where people want to make it sound like something is other than what it really is. We have cover-ups, we have falsehoods, and those abound in both parties, it seems. And we need to realize there's more than just two parties involved in all of this. Many deep-seated biases influence what media sources present to us. Facts are often skewed. In a recent interview, Newt Gingrich referred to the situation as being somewhat of a derangement syndrome. He called it a mass psychosis, and we say, how could that happen? But yet when we consider Nazi Germany, a generation ago, we saw something very similar. The masses in that country were swept up by the political events of the time. Some people went along with it because they were mentally and thoroughly involved in it, and others went along simply because it was convenient or it provided them with some benefit that they wanted. So there was two reasons for going along with this kind of thing. But it's something that can happen in a society. Rush Limbaugh explained it as a psychological disorder, which, again, I think we can identify with when we see all of the stuff back and forth being thrown from one side to the other. There's a political component, and it has to do with achieving power. Those not achieving their objectives are afraid of what's happening because they're losing power. And then it's reinforced by our news media, which isn't truth-oriented anymore. We should know that. That should be obvious. Everything, it seems, is agenda-driven. There's a commitment to a higher level objective. And our perspective on what's going on in the world is formed by the stream of information that slides before us. There's a deep informational network that can undermine any entity, be it a country, be it a religious institution, whatever. But there is a deep informational network being put forth. Government agencies are politicized. one party against the other. We've seen where our government agencies have been politicized, those that shouldn't be. There is this thing called left and right. And you may think that's a modern invention. Well, actually, no. That term has been used for at least 3,000 years, believe it or not. It's found in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. I'm going to read from there. I'll start in verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Yea, also when he that is a fool walks by the way, his wisdom fails him, and he says to every one that he is a fool. It's obvious sometimes. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against you, stay where you are, leave not your place, for yielding pacifies great offenses. Take time to meditate on verse 4. That is very profound. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against you, leave not your place. Hold your ground, in other words, for yielding pacifies great offenses. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as an error which proceeds from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich sit in low place. Another verse that's very profound. It seems that the leadership exhibits folly, and the rich, they work behind the scenes. They keep a low profile, in other words. But that's what's going on. And that describes so well what we see in our society today. But I'm not speaking on just a national level. That may have been the impression up to this point. But I want to expose something that is of much greater concern to us than just simply what's going on in our world today. And I refer to our world as what's going on within this country. It's bigger than that. That's my point. We have to wonder, what is the outcome of this going to be? Because we are getting into a situation where other nations are going to become polarized against us. That may not be obvious. But when we realize that this thing called the deep state has tentacles that are much greater than we might realize, we tend to think of the deep state as existing within this country alone. But it isn't. Our deep state is also connected with another entity. We refer to them as globalists. And these are people with great wealth in the world who are more involved and more the prime movers in what is happening in the world today than the visible or obvious political leadership. Many times the political leadership are being puppets of the globalist entity. There is a deep state nationally, but we need to realize there is a deeper state globally, and even more so, there is a spirit power involved in all of these people. We have the deep state, there is a deeper state, and there is the deepest state. Of all people should have a sense of what's going on in the world, because we're living in this world. We're living in these times. And it is a privilege. What's going on? You see, Bible prophecy deals with the important world developments, particularly as it regards the latter days. So once we have the general sense of where Bible prophecy is taking us, we can see the outcome of these many things. We also need to realize that if we just rely on the typical news sources, we're not going to get a clear picture at all. We do need to seek out and to consider alternative news sources. We have a privilege today, we have a situation today that is incredibly vast, unlike anything that existed even a couple of decades ago. There are alternative news sources. I'm not saying they're all good. I'm not saying they're right. But they do present facts that the mainstream media does not present. We should be looking peripherally. We should be looking to what's going on with a broader sense or a broader scale of informational sources than what you're going to hear on nightly television. Mark 13, we're given a mandate. Some people might take the position that, well, this is beyond anything we can do anything about anyway. Why bother with it? Well, there is an important reason. And I'll come to that important reason, but let's look at Mark 13, starting in verse 33. And this is referring to this very end time. Start in verse 32. How could it be anything else? But of that day and that hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father knows. Take heed, watch and pray, for you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work and commanded the porter to watch. Watch you therefore, for you know not when the master of the house comes, at even or at midnight or at the cock crowing or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. In this particular, recently, but for many, many decades, we have been warned that we need to be watching world events. Because those world events are going to come together and culminate in some very clearly prophesied events. We need to see it coming. We need to be watching. We need to know what's going on in the world because people are going to become so discouraged, so turned off, that they're going to despair even of any sense. Those of us who know the general direction, the general drift of what's coming, are going to be in a position to maintain hope through troubled times. We know troubled times are coming. Just consider the political polarity right now that's in control of our government. It's not going to affect just our people. It's not going to cause a very deep effect on our own people. It's going to affect those who also control world events. There is a deeper state, and it's focused basically in Europe, and we've known that for decades. There is a globalist element. People of great wealth and great influence, who, like Ecclesiastes said, keep in the background. They cut a low profile, but they're basically directing what's going on politically in the world to their own end. Do we realize that? And do we realize how that those globalist leaders are going to bring the world to the state that the prophecies explain in the sense of what is coming. Watching world developments is not a minor phase of our spiritual calling. It's something we need to be doing because we're going to be involved in it. We're going to be affected by it. And we need to have a general sense of what's going on. In John chapter 8, verse 32, Jesus said, "The truth will set you free." Well, free in what way? Free how? That particular thought has many, many applications, I suppose. But in this particular application, it would be free of corrupted beliefs and polarizations, because so many polarizations exist that are not supported by truth. People put forth what they like to put forth, those things that support their particular objective, politically or in other ways. But there is a greater deep state functioning in the world, and it's been functioning for centuries. And it is in collusion with another deep state, one that involves the spirit world, because there is the ultimate deep state. World events are not just directed by human beings or human objectives. The deepest state involves to cause them to do things that they want to achieve the objectives of the spirit world, which opposes Jesus Christ and everything he intends to do. And that's where prophecy is important. We should know the general sense of the prophecies. What is happening in this country is tampering with the globalist objective. How are they going to react to that? How are they going to respond? Is our political cleaning going to affect the relationship between this country and Europe? Because we know at some point in time, the European powers are going to be against this country. That is one of the prophecies, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. How is what's happening going to affect what's going on between ourselves and the Middle East? There's another political alliance that we'll talk about in a minute. There has been an overthrow in Saudi Arabia. The government is overthrown. And the present administration in Saudi Arabia is against the globalists. I don't know that that's been reported anywhere. But there is now a polarity developing between Europe and the Middle East, and between Europe and the United States. We're going to see those things develop in time. And those are going to develop along the lines of what we read in Daniel chapter 11. Because Daniel 11 is the ultimate end time political polarization that we're going to see happen. Are we seeing the opening stages of that right now? Daniel 11 describes in the latter days, the end times, the political scene that is going to ultimately, or three if we want to use that term for it, that is going to ultimately be the final battle for control of the world. It's a very profound prophecy. It's one that has been fulfilled back before the time of Christ. But we can see that there is a second application of the latter half of that chapter that describes the formation of the king of the north versus the king of the south. We have long understood the king of the north to be centered in Europe. the king of the south, more likely the Middle East. The political situation between the two is going to become so great that one is going to go to war against the other. I'll paraphrase here to make it go a little faster, but one, the king of the south is going to provoke, is going to push at, in some manner, the king of the north. Now, is that pushing to be the use of petroleum, or is it going to be the infiltration of their peoples into the European scene? We can see the possibility of severe conflict between the two. But it's going to develop to the point that one is going to intend to conquer the other. The second phase, or the second application of Daniel 11's prophecy, begins about in verse 29. It's hard to be exact, but it's about verse 29, where it says, "At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former or the latter." This is a different day, a different circumstance, even though the pattern of the two is comparable. But in verse 30, we got an interesting passage. It's the intention of the king of the north to attack the king of the south. But there's somebody that stands in the way. That's referred to in verse 30. "For the ships of Kittim shall come against him." Some power with a navy. And Kittim at the time of this prophecy was considered the power of the West, although the West there was a different place than it might be today. But there is this powerful navy that prevents the king of the north from doing what he wants to do, to invade the king of the south. "The ships of Kittim shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved." He's going to be angry. He ain't going to like this. "And go back to his original position and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant." Who are these people? Who is the power with this navy that prevents the king of the north from his intent to conquer the king of the south? And these, with this powerful navy, have within them those who forsake the covenant. These are people of the covenant who have basically spurned it. Do we have such people? Apparently so. And it's mentioned several times, this interaction between the king of the north and these who forsake the covenant. And if we look at the ethnicity of these globalists, we're going to be startled, because there is, in general, a connection with, or an ethnicity of, these who have basically thrown off their religious heritage to serve another cause, let's say. Something that may not be obvious, and we should think about it. It certainly adds another flavor to this scene. But when we consider who is the king of the north and who is the king of the south, we find them to be branches of a single family. The family of Abraham. The king of the north is going to encompass those who are the descendants of Isaac. We'll come to that another time. And those who comprise the king of the south are the descendants of the other family that Abraham had. We don't tend to think of Abraham's family outside of the legitimate line. But Abraham had another family. He had one descendant who was before Isaac. But he had several more, six or seven, afterwards. After Sarah died, Abraham married again, married Keturah. And he had, let's see, 6 more sons. Zimran, Joksham, Medan, Midian, Ishbek, and Shua. Now another component into all of this is what we could call the universal church. There is a religious power that is also, in effect, a deep component of what's going on in the world. We tend to think of the universal church as being religiously oriented and somewhat on the moral grounds, but something else is going on that we need to watch is there is an upheaval in that church. A new entity is beginning to move in and take power. There's a new entity organizationally. The outcome is not going to be your father's church. This church is going to ally with the God of forces. It's going to change from being just religious to one that is militaristic. Daniel 11, about verse 37, 38, if I got the right place. Talking about this religious entity, neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all, and in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his father knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. This entity is going to be very wealthy, very powerful, very influential. And he's going to sponsor a military. Now that's been done before. This particular organization has raised armies in the past. It shouldn't be a shock to think that it could happen again. So it's going to be a different entity. Now we got something else going on in the world, and it's called the hashtag MeToo movement, which has its own agenda. We may think it's just to support the victims who in the past have been treated improperly. There's a deeper level of that also, because it has the power to bring down politicians, it has the power to disrupt governments, and it has the power to bring down the universal church. It's got its own internal problem. It could be the means of overthrowing the powers that be in the church. And that could be what changes its composition, which changes its direction, which changes its orientation as to what its objectives are. When Europe and the United States become polarized against one another, there could be some very serious economic consequences. Because, you see, after the ships of Kittim prevent the king of the north from doing what he wants, a little further down we read that he does embark on that objective, and that navy is no longer in place. Something happened to negate that power to where it didn't have the influence that it once had. What could it be? Could it be economic? Think about that. Because wars are expensive. Not only do they cause great financial harm, but they cost an enormous amount of money. Just think of the military hardware that we have, or any country has. Enormously expensive. Enormously expensive. What if a world power was collapsed economically and didn't have the means anymore of going on a military campaign? Look how much money we spent just in Iraq. I mean, trillions. To what end? Not much. Amplify that up to the world scale. What will it be like? But then there's the boast that we read of in Revelation where it says, who is able to make war with us? Well, who would? If a country's economy is destroyed, if its wealth is destroyed, who could make war with them? Europe is not that powerful. Look at the trouble it took them. Look at all the time it took them to just overcome the events in Libya. We left it basically to the Europeans to intervene militarily. We offered support, but we didn't intervene to the degree they did. It was not a walkover. It was not easy for Europe. They were not that powerful militarily. So they wouldn't have to necessarily become all that great and powerful militarily if there was no one else able to fund or to finance making war. That has some serious implications for us, I would say. So we're going to see some changes in this world, and I think we're beginning to see the start of all of that. Who can say exactly what's going to happen or how it's going to happen? But from Bible prophecy, we have the basic overall picture. The end time battle for world control is outlined in Daniel chapter 11. The king of the north is going to ultimately conquer the king of the south. And with that accomplished, he's going to have basically a control of the major part of the world. There's a prophecy that says he's going to sell regional rulerships to the highest bidder. That's in Daniel 11:39, verse 39. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many and shall divide the land for gain. Once he's accomplished his objective, once he has conquered the king of the south, he is going to divide up regional control to the highest bidder. In Revelation 17, we're introduced to another major entity. It's called Babylon. We talked about this a little bit at Bible study last Tuesday, but who is Babylon? And there's a couple of whole chapters devoted to this. Let's go to Revelation 17, verse 5. Because this is another oblique look at the same entity, basically. Revelation 17. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. Is that just a religious entity, or is it something greater? When we read the whole chapter, we realize that this is an economic giant. This is a city or a state that is involved with commerce. And when it's destroyed, the world's commercial interests are going to bewail its loss. Who is going to do that? All the while, when the king of the north and the king of the south are doing their thing amongst one another, there is another power in the world that's going to basically lay back. And that is the Far East. They're going to basically stay out of it. They have interests, yes, but they're going to stay out of it. But after that conquest is accomplished, it concludes in the final verse of Daniel 11, where it shows that this king of the north is going to relocate his military headquarters into the Middle East. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. That isn't the verse I'm looking for. Oh yes, verse 44, the verse above. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. That's when the Asian powers are going to move towards the kingdom of the beast, the king of the north. World War I was the most senseless conflict of all times. I don't know if you've studied World War I. There certainly have been many documentaries on it. But in watching them, I didn't know much about World War I before, but I was struck with something. It was the most senseless conflict of all time. What on earth was the objective of World War I? Other than kingly powers fighting one another for prestige or whatever, what was the objective? I mean, they stood at the line, the trenches between one another for months, years even. What was the objective? Even when there was a decision one way or the other, what was the objective? It was just the most senseless war of all time that I could think of. But it set the stage for the Second World War. And by that time, there was an objective. And that was the Third Reich, what we call it. 1,000 years of the German Empire. That was the objective. They didn't achieve it, but at least there was an objective to it. But I mentioned earlier that there is the deep state, which is basically national. There is the deeper state, which is globalist. And there is the deepest state. And that we would identify with the spirit world. In Revelation 12, verses 3 and 9. We're exposed, or we're given a little scene here that gives us a glimpse into what is going on behind the scenes. Verse 3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. We have identified who these are. The 7 heads and 10 horns. We have prophecies that are rather detailed that give us that. I won't take the time to do it now. But down to verse 9. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. Well, what good is it to deceive the world if he doesn't have an objective? No, there's an underlying objective. The great dragon deceives the whole world. And he bequeaths his color to those who conspire with him. Same chapter, verses 3 and 4. This is that other wonder in heaven, the great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them into the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which is ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. We understand this to be the third of the angels that Satan deceived. They influence what's going on the earth. Revelation 13:4 tells us that the whole world worships this system. How does it worship? Well, it bows down to, or it serves the interest of. It's not necessarily a religious expression, but it serves the interests of this system. There is a spirit world influencing world events. Daniel 10:13 gives us a very briefest glimpse of something that we need to be aware of, because it explains a lot of the craziness. 10:13. I'm going to start in verse 12. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you did set your heart to understand and to chasten yourself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. There was a battle going on at a spirit level that held up the response to Daniel's plea. There is a spirit world that is behind a lot of world developments. That's how whole populations can become influenced to pursue a course of action that are otherwise unexplainable. They make no sense by themselves. In Ephesians 6, verse 12, another interesting comment. Ephesians 6:12. This is right after explaining about the whole armor of God. Verse 12, For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That's talking about that deepest state. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. If we are to be equipped with the armor to stand in that day, wouldn't it include an awareness of the enemy and of what's going on in the world? In 1 John 4, verse 1, just a few more here. 1 John 4, verse 1. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. There is a spirit dimension in a lot of things going on. Down to verse 4, that same chapter. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. We're told to watch world developments, especially as we get close to the end times. I'll just give a few references. I won't take the time to read them. Matthew 24:42 and 25:13. Ezekiel 9:4 refers to those who sigh and cry over what is going on in the city. Those who sigh and cry are those who know what's going on. They know what's wrong with it. Not that we can do anything about it necessarily, but at least we know. Our mandate is to be aware of the developments that lead to the end of this age. And that, again, is Matthew 13, 33 through 37. We read that earlier. But what's the point of all this? What's the point of being aware of what's going on in the world? What's the point of knowing these things? What's the point of having a sense for the developments that are going to lead to the prophesied events that we know are coming? Great Tribulation, a polarization of the King of the North and the King of the South, a major world conflict, a major defeat on the part of the King of the South, then an invasion from the East and the North of the Asian powers, leading to these armies gathering on the plains of Megiddo. We know what that's about. Knowing what's going on in the world, understanding the things that God has given us through some very specific prophecies will have one particular effect. And that's found in Luke 21, verse 28. Because this is something that we should be looking toward all of our Christian lives. Luke 21. I'm going to start in verse 25. And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, and the sea and the waves roaring. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with a great power and a great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh. It says in the book of Daniel that as these end time events are coming to play, that the wise will understand. How are the wise going to understand if they're clueless as to what's going on? My point in all of this is to realize that there are powerful political influences operating on a national scale, on a global scale, all directed by the spirit world, the deep state, the deeper state, and the deepest state. But many of them of understanding shall fall, it says in Daniel. They'll be tried, but it says none of the wicked will understand, but the wise will understand. Understanding is a major component in the hope that we have for the redemption that will occur at Christ's second coming. So let's not minimize our awareness of what's going on in the world. And let's frame our understanding of the outcome of these events on what biblical prophecy tells us. Because that's the greater sense of what is happening. So let's know the word, and let's know what's going on, so that we can handle it mentally and spiritually when it happens. That's the key, knowing how to handle it when it happens.